In the great halls of USA Today, we assemble the newsroom's mightiest nerds. Brett Molina.
I'm so sorry for the producer of this podcast.
Kelly Lawler.
I will fight you on it.
Brian Truitt.
Spoiler town!
Together, they form the Mothership. Their mission? To harness their collective encyclopedic knowledge of nerdiness in all its forms. To dissect every trailer, plot twist, and game released for the geekiest of fans. The Mothership, saving the universe from bad comic book adaptations every Friday.
All aboard the Mothership, the Geek Culture Podcast from the USA Today Network. Thank you so much for joining us, and happy Friday, everybody.
Yay!
Woohoo!
I'm Brett Molina. I cover tech, and the tallest building I've been to is, I think, some dumb hotel in L.A. It's not as cool as my co-hosts, but I wish it was Nakatomi Plaza, but anyway.
That would rule.
That would have been amazing.
Yeah.
And I'm Brian Truitt, film critic and entertainment writer, and the tallest building I've been in is the Empire State Building, which is boring. Because everybody's been there.
I'm Kelly Lawler, TV critic, and the tallest building I've been to is the Sears Tower, which at the time was the tallest building in the world.
I should have just lied and said I was in Dubai or something.
Yeah, you were there when Tom Cruise was hanging off it during mm-hmm. the Mission Impossible movie. Like, you helped with that stunt.
I know.
Or when Vin Diesel ran a supercar from one high rise to the other one.
Yeah, you were going to do both of those stunts, but then like your back hurt a little bit, so you're like, "Eh, I'll see
yeah,
this one out."
Yeah, I had a prior commitment, so yeah.
Vin, you take it over.
Yeah, exactly. If you're new to the show, welcome. New episodes of the Mothership come out every Friday, and you can subscribe to the podcast for free on Apple Podcasts. While you're there, how about you leave us a rating and a review? If you do, we'll give you a shout out on the pod, and if you give us a 5-star rating, we'll read your review out loud. So, you know, if you want to hear myself or Brian or Kelly say something really crazy on air, now's your chance. Don't waste your opportunity, please. Go for it. Don't forget, you can also get in touch with us on Twitter. We're at Mothership Pod. You can also email us at mothershippod@usatoday.com. We love hearing your ideas and all your feedback. It is greatly appreciated. And we've even made changes to the pod based on your input. So please, let us know what you want. We really like it. This week, we have a new movie out from The Rock. It's in theaters. It's called Skyscraper. It's basically Die Hard meets The Towering Inferno, but with the most electrifying man in sports entertainment.
In Hollywood, really, at this point.
At this point, yeah. Interestingly enough, it's coming out this weekend, and on Sunday is the 30th anniversary of Die Hard. So I don't know if that was a happy coincidence or what, but that's pretty cool.
It's a Die Hard ripoff.
If it was supposed to be that, it's not a very good one.
Well, Brian obviously has seen it, and he has definitely got plenty more thoughts. So as always, we'll give you a warning about spoilers if there's, you know, we usually avoid them. So, but just a heads up in case you haven't seen it yet. Later on in the show, we have a very special guest joining us in studio. We're going to take a little trip down memory lane to talk about Dwayne Johnson and everything he's done in Hollywood, his highs and lows, and everything in between. Before we dig in, though, here's a clip.
Mr. Sawyer, is your family enjoying their stay?
Very much so. They're shocked you gave us the entire floor.
After your security assessment, what do you think of the building?
With all due respect, he's a glorified security guard.
Please.
The Pearl is the tallest, most advanced building in the world. You've built a vertical city, but you've brought with it every single safety and security challenge that I could think of.
We thought this floor was empty.
So did I.
Not only have you brought them all indoors, but you've trapped them 240 floors in the air. No one really knows what would happen if things go wrong. But I'm just a glorified security guard, so what the hell do I know anyway?
That was from Skyscraper. So Dwayne Johnson plays Will Sawyer, a former FBI agent slash war veteran who left the business after getting injured on the job. He now works as a security consultant with one of his old friends, played by Pablo Schreiber. He taps him to sign off an insurance assessment of the world's tallest skyscraper. Of course, as this happens, bad guys are setting fire to the building and sabotaging the safety system and trying to frame Will for the whole thing. Oh, and by the way, his family's there, too. Brian will explain more of this in a bit. So yeah, this is basically, you know, The Rock trying to stop the bad guys and rescue his family and all that fun stuff.
As he does. I mean, that's kind of what it is. I mean, you know, he was a former FBI operative who had his leg blown off in a prologue incident. So we catch up to him in present day where he's now a security specialist that's been hired to make sure all is well in this super tall Hong Kong structure. It's like, what is it, 3,500 feet tall, 240 stories, I believe it is. So and it's got like a park in the middle of it. There's like a shopping center, residences. There's a big sphere at the top. It's nice. And so he's hired to like kind of make sure the security is all set and everything. But he was hired for a reason to kind of set him up to take the heat for when terrorists kind of they get in, they set fire to a whole floor, all hell breaks loose. He's kind of framed for it. So he's got to, and his family's trapped inside and they weren't supposed to be there. So what he then has to do is, you know, pretty much scale the building and save his family and, you know, save the day.
Blah, blah, blah.
So how did the family get involved? Were they just touring the building or something?
Well, no, I mean, he was kind of there to do all the security stuff. So his family came with him. They were, like, living on property for a while. They were supposed to go see the pandas at the zoo. Kid threw up. They ended up back in too early. And,
Damn, and kid. Then
they ended up trapped and are taken hostage.
Also, I just looked it up, and the actual tallest building in the world, Burj Khalifa in Dubai, is 2,722 feet.
This is a pretty big-ass
building. This is pretty big.
Not too shabby.
Well, it's The Rock, man. You don't, like, oh, it's just a little smaller than the tallest building.
Tom Cruise is short in real life, so they gave him the shorter, tallest building. And The Rock is pretty big, so they gave him the bigger, tallest
building. The super tallest building. So what's the best part of the film?
I mean, The Rock. I mean, The Rock's always the best part of any film. His character is interesting because, you know, kind of he's running around doing all this stuff with a prosthetic leg. You know, so he's kind of got a little bit of a limp as he, like, does all his daring do throughout the movie. And, you know, the prosthetic leg comes into play in interesting ways during the film too. But it's just like, you know, it's very over the top, and it's, you know, kind of like he goes up 96 stories on the side of a construction crane, and then gets on the construction crane, leaps across like a 40-foot chasm into the burning building with the police on, you know, on his tail. So it's just like, you know, there's a lot of over the top elements to it. You know, he holds up a bridge at one point by himself, of course he does. And you know, it's just, and he takes on a wind turbine out, you know, while scaling outside of the building on the 220th floor, you know. So it's just, it's a lot of like over the top stuff. It's kind of hilariously over the top too. It's not like, because I think Die Hard is very much kind of like, this guy shouldn't be here, but he is anyway, so he's got to save the day. And but he doesn't go up the building. He kind of like goes down the building, you know, through crevices and, you know, grates and things like that. And honestly, Die Hard is a really far-fetched movie, but it's like a documentary compared to this.
So is it the case of Skyscraper being the good bad movie, pretty much?
It's like the movie, you know. It's not even like good or bad. It's just kind of like, okay.
So
sure.
Anything else about the plot that stood out that was not great?
I mean, there's a lot of like little things that annoyed me. Like, you know, kind of he's FaceTiming with his wife at some point, and he says to her, "Well, tell me what the screen says at this point." And she's like, "Well, you're on FaceTime. Turn your effing phone around, and you can see it." You know, it's things like that. It's just like script things that probably could have been fixed.
So, if you're ranking The Rock movies, where does Skyscraper fall?
I don't know. I have a Rock rankings, whereas like a Rock movie
what?
Character
you
rankings.
Ranking
yes,
things?
I know. That's what we do here.
That's never happened.
Yeah, that's all we do at US Today is just rank things. So I have him at like number 8 because, I mean, the character's really kind of cool because, you know, he has a cool backstory. He got his leg blown off, but yet that doesn't stop him from, you know, scaling a 240-story building.
Obviously.
Obviously. And so, you know, he's like a good dad, too, and he's a good husband, and, you know, all the kind of the Rock traits. So I think the movie's not very good, but like the character is.
Okay, I'm gonna fire off a couple Rock movies. You tell me better or worse. Okay, okay? Ready? Here we go.
Oh, then Skyscraper.
Skyscraper. Okay. Yeah, better or worse? Skyscraper.
Okay.
Okay. Here we go. G.I. Joe Retaliation.
Oh, way better. Or no. Well, okay. So yeah, way better than Skyscraper. Yeah.
Okay. Hercules.
Worse.
Pain and Gain.
Pain and Gain's better.
I thought about mentioning a Fast and Furious movie, but I think
that's unfair. Because him, all the Fast and Furious movies are like way up there in terms of his stuff.
Tooth Fairy
is way worse. It's probably like the third worst movie he's ever done.
Okay, two more and then we'll stop. Baywatch.
Okay. Baywatch is much worse.
Rampage.
I have him like in my character ranks. I have it's like 8-9 with like Skyscraper right above Rampage.
Well, there you go. Don't forget, did you write a review for this, by the way?
I have a 5 totally preposterous moments piece up, and I also have updated Rock rankings on USA or life.usatoday.com.
Okay, let's dig into Dwayne Johnson and all things The Rock and his movies, his highs and lows and everything else. So now's a good time to introduce our guests. Joining us in the studio, we have Charlie Guile. By day, Charlie is an associate producer for NBC in Washington, D.C. In his free time, he is the co-host of this really cool podcast called Rock Talk, which is all about The Rock. Here's a quick clip. Can you smell what they're cooking?
Welcome to Rock Talk, the podcast where a couple of jabronis get to know the movie roles of Dwayne The Rock Johnson. I'm Jordan Rummel, joined as always by my good friend and co-host Charlie Guile. Charlie, how are you doing?
Doing really well. It's award season. I'm dressed fully head to toe, tuxedo. I got my patent leather shoes. They're shiny. Not as shiny as Dwayne Johnson's bald head. But I really wanted to, you know, do my part to get into the award season.
Well, I'm glad to hear you're dressed up because I am fully nude,
but I am real yin yang up.
I'm as wet as Dwayne Johnson's forearms in a driving scene in Fast 7. So I'm feeling it, man. The energy is electric.
Okay, Charlie, thanks for joining us, by the way.
Daddy loves who? Daddy loves me, and I love all of you guys. Thank you so much for inviting me. If you don't get that reference, you haven't seen the Skyscraper trailer enough. I have watched it so many times because it's amazing, and I hope the movie lives up to it. I haven't had a chance to see it yet. I'm very excited, but I guess through the magic of podcast scheduling, I will be seeing it yesterday.
Well, there you go. So
we won't ask you to rank it then in your psychic ranking.
And my expectations are pretty high because, you know, me and my co-host, we have spent the better part of a year reading things and looking at Instagram posts about the production of this movie. And, it did at first just seem like a straight up Die Hard ripoff. And then the Super Bowl trailer dropped. And that's when we learned that Dwayne Johnson was playing an amputee. That blew my mind. So my expectations are higher than they would have been, but I'm not expecting like another Fast and the Furious or even a Central Intelligence.
Well, there you go. When did you first fall in love with The Rock? Was there a moment? Was there a movie? What was it that, you know, first pulled you in?
Where am I in my walk with Dwayne Johnson?
Yes, exactly.
I'm a bit of a latecomer. I think the first Rock movie I ever really remember seeing is probably Get Smart. And I do vaguely remember The Scorpion King, but it really was Fast 5 that really brought me into it. I hadn't seen any of the other Fast movies. And to this day, even though I love the franchise as a whole, I'm really more concerned with what I call the New Testament of the Fast and Furious movies.
It's a really good analogy.
Yeah.
And that's post Dwayne Johnson. So, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, obviously. And then the upcoming spinoff will be great. So Fast 5, that movie blew my mind. And it really showcased like a whole other world to me. And so me and my co-host, we used to just like talk at people about the Fast and Furious movies at length. And at one point somebody said, hey, you guys should do a podcast about it. And so, and we sort of whittled that down. And you know what? Dwayne Johnson at the time, he was the highest paid actor. I think he still is. He was people's sexiest man alive. And he was also, people are pushing him to run for president. So all three of those things, what is happening here? We wanted to really get to the bottom of that.
Okay, well, let's talk about The Rock. First time we've seen a Rock film. Brian, what was your first?
Oh, I was an early adopter. I mean, I go back to like his days as Rocky Maivia when he came into the WWE, yep. Or then WWF, I believe, when he made the move to Hollywood. And I think his first thing was a cameo in Mummy 2, which then led to Scorpion King. So, I mean, I saw that because, you know, if I'm going where The Rock's going, because at that point I was just like, he is the most, you know, he is the people's champ. I'm going with him. So, and I've seen every Rock movie ever since.
Kelly, what was your first?
So I was trying to remember if it was The Game Plan or Get Smart. I think it was probably Get Smart, but I like remember seeing them both on TV. They came around out relatively close together.
Well, The Game Plan played all the time on the Disney Channel.
All it was the constant time. Loop. I don't even know if I've seen the whole thing, honestly. Like, I like remember like the scene where he's like in the kitchen with her and like
he does ballet at one
right,
point
because right,
it's funny to see a big guy in a tutu.
Yeah.
That's just high comedy.
I mean, they took that and then they made the Tooth Fairy.
That's right. Yeah.
We won't spend too much time talking about the Tooth Fairy.
That was unfortunate.
But yeah, and then I love Get Smart, which I feel like is like the when he plays the supporting asshole character, which is like a whole subgenre of his of his career. which I think is he does it the best in The Other Guys.
Yeah, for the 5 minutes he's in
for
that
the
movie.
5 minutes and he's in The Other Guys.
Aim for the bushes.
I love The Other Guys.
It's so good.
Okay, if you were all to build like a starter pack of four movies that someone who hasn't watched a lot of Dwayne Johnson films needs to watch.
Desert Island, Dwayne Johnson movie.
There you go. What are your four?
So when you look at, you have to include obviously one from the Fast and Furious movies. And my favorite, my personal favorite is Fast 5. But I actually, my opinion is Fast 6 is the prototypical Luke Hobbs Fast and Furious movie. You really learn more about his character. You learn that he has a daughter. You learn more about that in Fast 7. But to me, that is the Dwayne Johnson Fast and Furious movie. So I would include that one. I would include The Rundown, an early movie of his. It's a two-hander with Sean William Scott. Also, Christopher Walken is the bad guy. So it's pretty great. It's almost like Dwayne Johnson meets Indiana Jones. Really great, really successful early career movie for him. And then Moana, just because it's probably the best executed of any of Dwayne Johnson movies because it has Disney behind it, obviously.
Is that the only one he sings? Is there another one where he sings?
He sings. So this is something that we actually track on our podcast is he sings in a lot. In the game plan,
his
character is obsessed with Elvis. And that was something that Dwayne Johnson as a person brought to that. So, you know, this is a rabbit hole that we can go down for a long time. But in that movie, his character, Joe Kingman, has a lot of Elvis memorabilia. Well, that was all Dwayne Johnson's personal collection. So he sings an Elvis song in that. Obviously, he sings in Moana. He sings a couple of other times in Be Cool. We actually see him. It's in the background, but he is in a music video and he's like a cowboy. And I want to get my hands on that full music video. It's out there somewhere. And I want to know how they made
Here's
it.
Here's the call. Listeners, if you can find it, send it to Charlie.
We'll give you a huge shout out on the pod if you do.
I'd love that. And then the last one, Central Intelligence. I think for just a straight comedy movie, it is the most successful movie that he's made. And he's tried to sort of replicate it. He's best when he's paired with another great actor or comedian. And in that case, it was Kevin Hart.
Kelly, what are your picks?
Even though he started in The Mummy 2, Scorpion King is when he got to take that character and really like turn it into something more exciting and to kind of headline something.
But somehow the CGI got worse between those two movies.
You know what? I don't question the CGI gods. They give and they take away. And then I'm putting in The Other Guys just because I love it so much. And even though he's only in it for 5 minutes, it's a great 5 minutes. But Get Smart could kind of go in there too. It's the same kind of idea, as I said earlier. Fast 5, which I think is going to be on all of our lists. I included Moana also because he does a lot of family-friendly movies, and I think Moana is the best of them.
Brian, what's your pick?
Well, I'd definitely do Fast 5, Moana, and Central Intelligence like they've talked to. I would also throw in Jumanji. It's not a rock movie. It's the Rock in a, you know, kind of a bigger ensemble kind of thing. But he's so good because, you know, he's playing the avatar of a nerdy kid, video game avatar of a nerdy kid. So he's acting like a character, acting like another character. And that's a kind of deep for a guy who, you know, who was once a wrestler. I think he really shows kind of like the dramatist in him, the comedian in him. And also, you know, he runs around on a motorcycle with a, you know, a chainsaw and or no, a flamethrower. So, I mean, so there's the action sense too. I feel like kind of Jumanji is kind of one of those films that kind of wraps everything The Rock does well in the one package.
And his production company produced that movie.
Of course it did.
So I think it's probably the most successful one that he's produced. Yeah. I mean, I think the first one was Baywatch, and I don't know if everyone here has seen Baywatch, but that one, even as a Rock fan, as somebody who really wants to like every movie that I see him in, that one was a struggle.
So what are the things that make a good Rock film? You know, what is it that, you know, makes these movies that we've mentioned stand out from his other body of work?
So one of the things that we do on our podcast is we put every Rock movie to a test, and that breaks down into three categories, and that's hard work, charisma, and physique. And to me, that really breaks down why The Rock is so likable and why people continue to go see him. There's not that many actors out there that you can sort of substitute whatever the name of the movie is for this is the blank movie. Tom Cruise is one, probably Jennifer Lawrence, and then The Rock. You know, what movie are you going to see this weekend? Oh, there's a new Rock movie. I don't know what it's called, but I know I'm going to go see it because he's in it. So hard work. You know, I feel like he's constantly working hard. That's like one of his mantras is you want to be the hardest worker in the room. He hashtags it in every single post that he ever puts on Instagram. And then charisma, I mean, going back to his time at WWE, that's like the one thing that you can coast on. And honestly, through brute force, he sort of forced his way into Hollywood. And it's really, I feel like he's stuck there because of his charisma. And then physique, obviously, he looks great in every movie. But you see, I mean, when you break it down in almost near pornographic detail like we do on our podcast, there are weird differences. And sometimes, you know, he spends half of the movie shirtless, like in Baywatch or in Skyscraper. I'm not expecting a lot of shirtless scenes just because whatever. So, you know, that's what you go to Rock movies for.
Kelly, what do you think? What's the perfect Rock movie?
I think that, like, either you have to use his like you said, his physique is a huge part of his appeal. And so I think you either have to, he has to essentially be playing himself, which is like this like gentle giant kind of Andre the Giant kind of deal. Or he has to be playing against type so that, like in Jumanji, where his body is almost a joke based on his character. And so I think they do that well in Central Intelligence too. And so he ends up being able to play a lot of different types. And honestly, I think his type almost always works. In general, in like Baywatch, which we're all bringing up as a really as an example of a failure, his character is fine. You know what I mean?
Like, checks the boxes.
Right. That's a guy you can build a movie around. But you have to build a good movie around it, or at least a good bad movie around it. So I think that's, to me, like in general, in that sort of raunchy nostalgia comedy thing, it's why like Channing Tatum shares a lot of characteristics with The Rock. It's why Jonah Hill was a better foil for him than Zac Efron was for The Rock, because Zac Efron is just doing what The Rock did smaller, and it doesn't work. Like The Rock fills up the room. Zac Efron like can't fit in like a little space in the side.
You almost have to be a polar opposite in a way.
Right. Like if it had just been that one guy, I don't remember his name, but the sort of schlubby guy who really wants to be a lifeguard, and they'd gotten rid of Zac Efron's character, I think Baywatch would have been a lot more successful.
So Brian, what are your ingredients?
You have to have everything in the package. You have to have, you know, you use all the talents. Comedian, dramatist, stuntman, jabroni punching machine. I think the perfect Rock stuff makes use of the talents, because I think a lot of people don't know how to use them right. And I think more people do now. But I think, you know, kind of coming out of the WWE, where he showed everything he did in wrestling, he shows now. It's just no one watches wrestling. And so no one, you know, kind of that, it was news to them that there was this guy who was so talented. But if you go back and look at promos he did, wrestling matches he did, he had all of it then. It's just a matter of, like, what can filmmakers use that? How do filmmakers use that? And early on, they couldn't do it. They just saw him as, like, Arnold Schwarzenegger clone, just put him in like Doom and just have him like shoot things, and you're totally wasting the man. I think, you know, people like, you know, kind of Central Intelligence, Jumanji, you know, the Fast and Furious films, they understand that he is a multifaceted actor who can do a lot of different things really well. I think people just thought they were working with Hulk Hogan. And so they were like, okay, well, we have Hulk Hogan, you know, Hulk Hogan 2.0, what can we do with him? They don't understand. They have like Hulk Hogan, Cary Grant, you know, all these other things, just all in one kind of one package.
Okay. Time for like best worst films. One pick, Charlie, what's your best Rock film?
I definitely think it's Central Intelligence. It's a cohesive movie front to back. It's simple. I think Rock movies are best when they're simple plots. When he's playing against Kevin Hart, who's hysterical, he gets to show some of his comedy chops as well. And he's playing against type. You know, he's a former big guy who is now suddenly in this body. His name is Bob Stone, but he changed it from Robbie Weirdick. So, you know, that it's a joke that's successful. And I stand by it. and I really enjoy it. And I can't wait to see them team up again in Jumanji 2.
Kelly.
So I'm going with Moana because, A, I think it's probably, like Charlie said earlier, like the best film start to finish on his repertoire. But I also think he is so essential to that movie and to its success in a different way than like, oh, the latest Rock movie. I think it is the one time that he did a movie that wasn't a Rock movie and he made it better. I mean, not the one time. I think he did that with the Fast and Furious franchise, too. But I think it just feels a little different because it was like a Disney princess movie and they injected it with The Rock, which doesn't seem to make sense on the outset. But then with everything that they were trying to do with Moana, they weren't making it a love story. They were trying to make it incredibly authentic to the Pacific Islander experience and to that kind of heritage. And I just remember, like, when he was promoting that movie, like, you saw him doing traditional dances and traditional clothing, like, on his Instagram and, like, educating people about his history and his family. And, you know, he had the great back and forth with the girl, Awali Cravajo, who played Moana. And I think they put him, like, they made that guy big. And they gave him, obviously, the tattoos are traditional. And they just gave him The Rock's essence. And then he had such a great voice performance. He learned how to rap. It was really successful because of him. He sold it really well, and it helped move the Disney princess idea forward, which is a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really tricky thing to do, to stay true to the heritage and cast Pacific Islanders and then make it all work. I mean, it's his highest rated Rotten Tomatoes score for a reason. I think it's a pretty flawless movie.
Mm-hmm. Brian, what's your pick?
Well, I think Moana is up there, but I think what he did in Fast Five is more impressive because he single-handedly jump-started this flailing action movie franchise. The first four Fast and Furious movies suck, like, hard. And yes, and then for, I mean, Fast and Furious, the fourth one wasn't that bad. I mean, they were kind of like starting to turn the corner, but still, it's just like they really couldn't do much with it. It isn't until Fast Five when they figured out they kind of had to be this kind of like outlaw car gang, you know, saving the world G.I. Joe team, that's what they figured out. Okay, but this is what we want this franchise to be. It's not just kind of like Vin Diesel stealing cars every movie.
That was when they jumped the shark in the best way.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They're like, okay, we're going to jump the shark, you know, like 50 sharks, and we're going to own this thing.
They went from stealing computers in the first movie to bringing down international terrorists.
They weren't stealing computers. They were stealing VHSs.
Sorry, VHS tapes.
I just want to make sure everyone knows that they were stealing VHSs off the back of trucks in the first movie, and it's perfect.
Now, I don't think there was a Fast 4. I think they just renamed it Fast and Furious, and then it's like, yeah.
Which is terrible. Come on.
I mean, the naming scheme has always been screwed up.
Where they killed off Michelle Rodriguez.
And then she came back. Nobody ever actually dies in the Fast.
So I'm except holding for up. Han.
No. All right. Justice for Han. He's coming back in Fast 10.
Of course he is.
When they go to space.
No one dies.
They'll find him in space.
Okay. Worst Rock movie. Charlie, is that even possible? Is there a worst Rock movie?
So what we often say, and we get some criticism on our podcast because we do talk about how some of his movies are unsuccessful. We get criticism like, well, if you like The Rock so much, then how can you hate on him? And it's one of those things, if you love somebody, you can really pick them apart. And to me, like, our mantra is even the worst Rock movies are better than most movies. So this is, to me, this is a hard thing to do. But if I have to make a choice, it's kind of a deep cut. It's an art house movie. It's the follow-up to Donnie Darko by whatever that director's name. It's a movie called Southland Tales, co-starring Justin Timberlake. The movie opens up and it says chapter 4, where the first three chapters, I had no idea doing some research after I saw the movie, you find out that the first three chapters are in graphic novel form. And that sort of sets the tone for how confusing and insane this movie is. And I it's hard to watch. So I'm going to put that last.
Wow. I did not know that existed. That's crazy.
It's worth a watch just as an experience.
I think you have to be in the mood to like something like that. I mean, if you dig things that like make no sense and are kind of art housey things, and you know, you can get the artisticness of that, of being thrown into a weird post, you know, kind of apocalyptic movie like that. It's cool. I mean, but I totally understand.
It's beat beat the Book of Revelation.
Yeah.
And knowing that after the movie, maybe a second watch, I'd benefit from a second watch, but as it stands right now.
Okay, so I just looked it up on IMDb, and this is beat for beat the Book of Revelations. During a 3-day heat wave just before a huge 4th of July celebration, an action star stricken with amnesia meets up with a porn star who's developing her own reality TV project and a policeman who holds the key to a vast conspiracy.
Yeah, what
metaphor.
Book of Revelation are you reading?
I'm going to change religions.
Wow. Brian, what's your pick?
I think we all say Baywatch is pretty bad, but I think we forget his craptastic early career. I think we forget Scorpion King, which is effing terrible.
I totally forgot about Doom.
And Doom. Everybody forgets about Doom.
He has even turned on Doom. He references it as like a huge mistake, and
he
has only recently done that with Baywatch.
Yeah, I think he knew that. I mean, I think he tried to like toe the line when Baywatch came out. Like,
this is a movie.
Yeah,
it's
a movie
fans.
For the fans, not the critics. And then it's just like 6 months later. Yeah, that sucked.
Yeah,
that is part of the reason that I made Baywatch my choice, because afterwards he was like that, and I'm
defensive.
Just like, that's below
every
his
actor's
persona.
Like that,
yeah, but
every
I think part of his
like
appeal
that.
Is he isn't like every actor. You know what I mean? Like, I feel that it was a mistake. It was a very public mistake for him to do that, because especially because like he like tweeted at like some critics being like, this isn't for you. And I'm like, no. Like, you're above this. The point of it is that like you have fun and everyone else gets mad.
This whole thing is
mad.
Positivity, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. So that like turned me on him for like a couple months. I was just like, I don't like when people do that, especially like as a female critic on the internet. Like it's just like a bad look.
It can get nasty.
So that's why I picked Baywatch. And also because it was another one that was so hugely sold on him, and like the rest of it couldn't live to match it up. Like all those Instagram posts. At a certain point, I thought the movie was just going to debut on his Instagram.
And what it looks bad now, but he had like a whole YouTube series with Logan Paul. I don't know if you remember that.
Oof. No.
They've since taken them down, but that's it was smart. Like a whole media campaign like with YouTube stars. So yeah.
Logan Paul is the YouTube star who filmed in the suicide place in
Japan. Yeah,
who's been under quite a bit of controversy. If you don't keep up with YouTube star news,
has a brother too. It's wild.
He's big on collaboration for better or for
worse.
Yeah,
exactly. And I think sometimes he makes the wrong decisions about things, and he goes in like all positivity and everything because mm-hmm. he has people around him. You know, he puts his faith in other people, and I think sometimes it doesn't work. Sometimes it does. But give him credit though. I mean, he takes big swings. He does mm-hmm. not take small swings on anything.
No. But I think oftentimes you need somebody steering the ship to make a good movie. And that is, you see that a lot in the Fast and Furious movies. They're written by one guy, not a team of writers. This is one genius's vision. And the Seven Bucks Production movies, which is his production company that he started making since last year, starting with Baywatch, and pretty much going forward, they will be Seven Bucks Productions. It is very collaborative. You saw that in Rampage. The script had a completely different ending, and somebody came to The Rock and explained that, I don't want to spoil it, but that the movie should change, and he took him up on it, and they changed it for, I think, the worse.
Yeah, it's interesting, because also, like, you know, we're talking about his movies, but you forget that, like, he's on a TV show every year for, like, the past few years on Ballers on HBO, which, like, is a weird footnote in his career, yet like he consistently will like go to Miami for 3 months and film Ballers
and shoot like 20 episodes
and it's actually HBO's top rated comedy, even though you hear about Veep and Silicon Valley and Insecure far more, which is something that I continuously find interesting. Ballers, if you don't know much about it, is Entourage set in the sports world, except not quite as problematic, but like it's still pretty problematic. But I mean, that's just how problematic Entourage was.
Right.
but what's really impressive, I mean, you bring up kind of the fact he goes to live in Miami for 3 months and does this. But yet, if he's not making a movie, he's going around, traveling on a plane, going to every freaking probably country in the world, finding some time to eat a lot, finding time to go to the gym a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And he also just had a baby.
Had a baby.
For God's sake.
Mm-hmm. 3-month-old baby.
Like, how do you live that life? And you know, he must not sleep.
No, I mean, he wakes up every day at 4.
Power naps, man. I guess.
If you knew.
I'm not going to lie. My favorite Instagram posts of his are the cheat day ones where he's eating like 20 pancakes.
Like
and I'm like,
that,
oh my God, how do you do this?
Once again, not he's taking big swings even on his cheat days.
Yeah, or just in life. I think that's kind of the most impressive thing about this guy. And I think it speaks to what Kelly was saying. You know, he's very real. We kind of hold him above other actors because we see how real he is, like every day on social media and in interviews and everything. I've talked to him millions of times. Dude doesn't, you know, he friends you on Twitter or
follows you on Twitter.
And it's really amazing kind of watching, you know, because we don't get to see a lot of, you know, like actors go from like nothing to like the biggest thing in the world anymore. I think we saw that a lot. You know, our parents and grandparents saw it in old school Hollywood. But I mean, I watched when he was Rocky Maivia and he was like the worst wrestler of all time because he couldn't figure out his gimmick. That guy is now the biggest star in the world. It's fun watching to see that entire character arc and life of this guy. So to kind of see him and have him be this kind of real person that like talks to people on Twitter, you know, just fans and just kind of like live an interesting life.
And that was one thing that we discussed in our podcast, and it's something I'm sure you guys have thought about, is where does his public persona end? And what is he like behind the scenes? And everything I've read, it's like, he's that guy.
He is that guy.
What you see is what you get. And that blows my mind.
I mean, you guys have to read this GQ profile.
By Katie Weaver,
yeah,
right?
I'm sure Charlie has already read it. It's from last year, and it's called Dwayne Johnson for President. And if you just Google that, you'll find it. And it was fascinating to me on a number of levels. But, you know, sort of like, first of all, she goes and does his workout. And so you just want to read about any normal person going and doing a workout with The Rock. Like,
I would be broken in half.
Like, I think she writes, she was like, oh, this isn't that bad. And then by the end of it, that she thought that this was the day she was going to die. Like, but then she also talks about how he is that way in real life. And then, like, when she's really pushing him on this, like, everyone wants him to run for president thing, he's, like, being so amenable and he's being kind of bland. And then she's like, I want you to answer a question. And she like, finally gets him to answer a question. He has to take a stance. And it's the stance you think he would take. You know what I mean? I think she asked him about about a Muslim ban. And he was against it. And so it's really interesting. It gets into a lot. And I think, you know, we want to talk about, like, why is he so likable? I think he has this kind of ability to span demographics in a really interesting way. And I think for a female audience, obviously he's good looking, although I never agreed with the decision to make him the sexiest man alive.
Yeah, we'll get to that later. I have questions for you guys.
There's a reason that the Chris Hemsworth Sexiest Man Alive cover is on my desk. But
that's unimpeachable.
He embraces empathy and kindness in a way that very few male stars understand is important to connect with female fans. Chris Evans understands it. Oscar Isaac understands it, I think.
I think, too, it's specifically male action stars, because if you go back to, like, Arnold and Stallone, they were very much the super macho action star type, and that's all you got. You didn't get anything else.
Right, and then The Rock is still that kind of, like, height of machismo, partially just because of the way he looks and how much he emphasizes going to the gym, and he has an Under Armour line and, you know, and that kind of thing. But it's through the lens of being positive and empathetic and, like, thinking that workouts can make you better, which is, like, a very trendy part of, like, health right now. You know, he was really on point with how people think about health, because, like, there's an interesting article in the New York Times last year about how, like, for example, Weight Watchers is struggling because no one wants to diet. They want to get healthy. And The Rock is all about self-improvement. And that's very, very trendy right now. And so he just predicted these things, and he's not threatening despite being so big and so, like, such a daunting figure. He's not threatening personally,
and he's not annoying either, too.
Right, and he knows how to curate his social media. Like, I mean, I he's like this in real life, but also he knows how to what to post
knows
and
how to
when
play the
to
game.
Post it. And, like, I think in that GQ profile, Katie Weaver tracks his, like, rise down to an Instagram when he rescued one of his dogs from drowning. And first of all, that's cool. That's something we expect The Rock to do. But then he posted the Instagram holding his two tiny French bulldogs in the water in a white, wet t-shirt. So, like, obviously he, like,
got both sides of it.
Right. He looks very attractive and everything. But then he was like, oh, my God, like, this is like the fireman who rescued a cat from a tree in real life.
Yep, exactly.
Not to digress too much further, but talking about how he appeals to everyone, especially female fans, one of the things that he's done a good job is cultivating this persona of being a mentor to young women.
Mm-hmm.
He has a 16-year-old daughter. He's got a three-month-old daughter.
Loves his mom.
She was recently on Good Morning America and disclosed the fact that his nickname was Dewey back in the day. And you just don't see that character break in him. He was so embarrassed by it. I just never thought I'd see that. But in the Fast and Furious movies, he has a daughter. In Fast 7, he's, like, the coach of the Little League girls soccer team. So I think it's super interesting. It's something that, yeah, would not have happened in the 80s.
Mm-hmm. I think he's also kind of partly motivational speaker, too, in a weird way
sure.
with his posts.
Did you ever use the Rock Clock app? Because I have.
That's how you wake up
exactly.
at 4.
Yep. He'd have these Instagram posts where he's, like, up at midnight and he's at the gym and you're like, holy shit, what are you doing? And it's like, no matter where he's at, no matter what he's doing, he's going to keep grinding and doing his thing. And that's something to aspire to.
Yeah. Like, the Rock Clock is literally, like, your alarm is affirmations from the Rock.
Yep.
And it has a setting if you want to wake up when he wakes up, if you're, like, an insane person.
Don't do that.
See,
that would
make me hate The Rock. If The Rock's sitting here on my phone going, wake up, jabroni. You know, I just can't deal with that.
Wake up, jabroni. I would love that, actually.
So how surprising is it that The Rock has gotten as big as he is? Because there was one point, I think it still is, he's the highest paid actor in Hollywood right now.
Well, why? Who else would you pay that much for?
Well, I know, but I'm just, are you surprised that he's gotten this far?
Well, it probably depends on when you ask me. Like, if you asked me when he was rocking my Via, probably, yeah.
I was going to say, if it's like 1998 and you saw him where he was at and said, this guy's going to be the highest paid actor in Hollywood in 20 years.
But if you told me, like, oh, maybe, I don't know, late 90s, early 2000s, when, like, post-Nation of Domination rock, yes. I could see you saw something in a wrestling ring that was unlike anything else. It was like Hulk Hogan, like, back in the day. But more, because it was like, it was a villain who you couldn't stop loving. And it's just like, it's impressive seeing a personality like that. Some dude who is so evil and, you know, kind of like a poor and everything. And you're like, yeah, dude, go. You know, you just love this guy. You love this character this guy has created. And if he can create that out of a villain, just think of what he can do, like, with a hero or just being himself. So I think he showed all those things at that point. So if you said, okay, well, that guy, you know, in 2018 is going to be the biggest star in the world, I'd be like, okay. I wouldn't be shocked.
But, yeah, in the wrestling ring, yeah, I agree with you. But we still have not seen another wrestler translate to Hollywood in the way that The Rock has. I know you have Batista, who's done some really great spot roles, but he has not starred in anything. I mean, Guardians of the Galaxy, sort of. Hulk Hogan, you know, his ill-fated movie career, I'm sure you guys
terrible.
Know.
He had a level, and, like, he just could never get beyond that, like, I'm Hulk Hogan thing.
Right.
He couldn't act.
And his characters also couldn't have flaws, really. He always had to be the good guy. His charity in No Holds Barred is just simply called Sports for Kids.
Rip it.
Yeah, rip. And then so you also had Rowdy Roddy Piper.
Who could have been great.
Live is good, but he was also in Hell Comes to Frogtown, which was terrible.
I don't think Hollywood knows what to do with wrestlers. I think they see wrestlers as kind of like one-dimensional characters. But I think if you give, like, The Miz, for example, I think if you let him do more things, he could be, like, this really kind of good actor.
I think Jericho could have been a good actor, too.
Jericho could have been great. I think Batista, if they figured out how to use him.
He was the best part in Spectre.
Mm-hmm. And we still have John Cena's career, which looks pretty good so far.
Yeah. So he's taken the right
roles.
And
Blockers. You look at Blockers and you're like, okay, somebody's figured out how to use this guy.
I was about to say, Blockers is the first time that they figured out how to use him other than, like, he is big. Mm-hmm. Or he is nice with kids. He did that cartoon.
Ferdinand.
And then I think of him in Trainwreck, where the whole joke is that he is a big guy, or in that that Tina Fey.
Oh, where he's just like a drug dealer just standing around.
Oh, yeah.
People hang off of him, mm-hmm. which, I mean, is funny. And in certain movies, that is what you need. You know what I mean? But I think Blockers is, he got to stretch himself, and then it was such a good movie. And
it's John Cena in a movie. The joke was he was funny.
He was
not
funny.
The fact that he was in a movie was
right.
funny.
Yeah, I agree.
I think filmmakers, I think they have this, like, again, they have this thing where that, you know, they see wrestlers as one thing and they don't, like, see the apple for the trees. They don't see all the different talents they bring to a Monday Night Raw or a SmackDown or anything. They just see him as, okay, well, they, you know, they can do stunt work, or they're kind of funny, or, like, they put him in a box. Whereas I think, I don't know why people don't look at The Rock and be like, we didn't know how to use this guy either. And look, you know, if you gave him a shot, this is what he becomes. I think there's a lot more to it that they're just not doing.
And getting back to the original question, you know, did we ever think this was going to happen? Probably no, but if you break it down, this dude's not afraid to fail. Which mm-hmm. I think is very, very key to his success.
Mm-hmm. We're in an era where we're losing a lot of movie stars as an appeal, like franchises are overtaking. I think, Brian, you wrote that story like last year. And I think in order to be a big star right now, you need to be a crossover star in some way. You think about go to music and you have like sort of Beyonce and she came from something else and then built something else. The you know, I mean, honestly, whatever you think of him, our current president is a crossover star. And so it is the ability to adapt your career is, I think, really important right now in Hollywood because things are changing so quickly. And I think, you know, someone like The Rock with the pulse in it, going back to Ballers, he's like, you know, TV's freaking out. Like, I need to do something there. Before you know, HBO loses to Netflix or whatever. I think he knows how to adapt. And I think those are the stars that are going to go forward. I think Tom Cruise, he doesn't necessarily adapt, but he's figured out how to keep himself in the game. He stays in his lane, and that's how he adapts, honestly. He stopped trying to win an Oscar.
Human car crash dummy is his new role.
No, but I mean, he owns it, though.
Right.
Like, I love it.
But he says, you know, he's probably going to die doing a Mission Impossible stunt. He's fine. I mean, I think, you know, he has made that choice.
I'm so excited for the new one just because we heard that, oh, he got injured and he was off the set for a certain amount of time. And this movie looks awesome. And I think Dwayne Johnson also kind of keys into that sort of appeal as well.
So this gets us now to like his legacy, because we've talked about how franchises now are overtaking. Does this make The Rock now kind of the last action star of our time? I mean, is this it? Like, what is his future? I mean, what do we expect from his career going forward?
I think we will look back at him as sort of the last of a generation.
Like, he's almost like a dinosaur in a weird way.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I totally. Yeah. So that archetype of big, muscly action star really peaked in the 90s with you had Stallone, Schwarzenegger, those kind of guys, but they were not willing to adapt. Dwayne Johnson was. And if he would have been, you know, born 15 years earlier, he may have had a career similar to that, may have been as successful as now, but I don't think we would be looking to him as sort of really an interesting case study in how an actor can morph his persona and change it with the times.
Yeah, I think for him, he's going to adapt where the tides tell him to adapt. He's got good instincts. The people around him clearly have good instincts. I think it would be interesting, and I think it really just depends on the climate. But if the climate presented it for him, I would love to see him do something serious. I would love to see him try to win an award. I just want to see what happens.
An interesting movie is one called Snitch, and it's really more of a gritty drama where he stars opposite Susan Sarandon. And it's interesting. I wouldn't say it's 100% successful, but if that's what you're looking for, that's about the only place you're going to find it in his whole filmography. Mm-hmm.
I think he will get an Oscar, but I think it'll be a supporting Oscar in some role that we're not expecting. You know, it's just like some like
he'll lose
left
weight.
Field thing that we're not expecting, and like he just owns a movie.
He'll get a lifetime achievement one of these days.
Oh, I think he'll get a real. I think he'll get a real.
You
Oscar.
Think so?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think he's too. He's young. I mean, he's in his
45.
45. He's got. I mean, if he stops doing the, I mean, he could still do the action roles. I mean, kind of Tom Cruise is still doing them. But I don't. I think at some point he's going to be like, okay, I want to be doing more actory kind of things because he has those talents.
And he has learned so much. If you watch his early roles, he's so wooden, and now he's likable, and it comes off on screen. And Sometimes his movies, their nuanced performances, Pain and Gain is a great example.
And
I'm so sorry we haven't been able to talk more about that movie.
It's because, such a ridiculous movie.
But it's also really well acted.
It's also Michael Bay's best movie. Called it.
It's
here.
Up there.
That's a low bar.
It's up there.
Ah, man. Oh, we got to have a Michael Bay episode.
Well, The Rock is the best Michael Bay movie of all time, but that's just...
Different Rock.
Yeah, there's
that's we, a, yeah. yeah right. That there's Rock a is lot. Also great, though.
He did Bad Boys, too, right?
Yeah. I think he is going to go down as the best action star, biggest action star of all time. I think when all is said and done, you know, years from now, he will be seen as better than Arnie, better than Sly, better than all of them because of what he's been able to do just over the course of his career.
There's an interesting scene in The Rundown. It's near the beginning of the movie, and a lot of people saw it as Arnold Schwarzenegger handing the baton to The Rock. They pass each other in a hallway in a club, and Arnold goes, you know, great
have
scene.
Fun. Yeah,
you know,
have fun.
Have fun. That's exactly what he says. Story behind that is he was shooting Terminator Rise of the Machines on the same lot. They brought him over in a day. But I think that's what everyone's been expecting from him. So I hope you're right. I hope we look back at him and say that, you know what, he took up that mantle and he ran with it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, listeners, it's your turn. We want to hear from you. What did you think of Skyscraper? And what is your favorite Dwayne Johnson film? Let us know on Twitter. Our handle is @MothershipPod. You can also tweet at us individually. I'm @BrettMolina23.
I'm @BrianTruitt.
And I'm @KLawls, KLAWLS.
And you can find Charlie on Twitter @CharlieGuileNBC and his podcast, Rock Talk, @RockTalkPod, where you can subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts. Last but not least, don't forget, you can email us. We are @MothershipPod@USAtoday.com. That'll do it for this week. Thanks so much for joining us. Thanks again to Charlie for joining us. And special thanks to our producer, Taylor Macon, the true pilot of the Mothership. If you like what you heard today, don't want to miss an episode moving forward, you can subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts While you're on Apple Podcasts, leave us a rating and a review. Do it and you'll be our best friend forever. You can also find us on Google Podcasts, SoundCloud, Stitcher, wherever else you can listen to your podcast, you will find us. Don't forget, Kelly has a new Facebook group that's for people who love TV and love to talk about TV. You can join by searching for Yes, I'm Still Watching on Facebook. Next week, a very big debate for us. We're going to debate whether or not it's time for geek culture to die, or at least take a very, 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 very long break. But until then, thanks for joining us. Nerds out.
Later, jabronis.
Have fun.